Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, opening day of baseball for the Milwaukee Brewers in California. And we're going to talk about the beginning of baseball, which, of course, is always much more about the beginning of a renewal of life, because baseball has a lot of substance to it. There's a lot of poetry when it comes to baseball. And we're going to look at this season. Our guest this hour, Michael Bauman, who's the national columnist for MLB.com, has written. He writes poetically, I think, about baseball. Other things, too. But he has a column, what is today, 2 days ago, saying that the start of every regular season is like a renewal of hope for the game's fans. And this year, well, if only the baseball could supply the massive infusion of hope that the current world situation requires. The festivity of the new season opens against a backdrop of economic uncertainty, lost jobs, lost homes, lives in serious distress, fiscal and otherwise. Where does baseball fit in? How can baseball fit in during times that are this difficult? That's a good question. And so we'll ask that question at the beginning of the hour. Michael Bauman is our guest. He happens to be my husband, in case we make references to all the baseball that's going in our house. And it will be nonstop for the next few months because we're in the baseball season. Michael has been a sports columnist for the Milwaukee Journal, and he has been with MLB.com for some time now. He's in Boston, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for him. You may want to center on the Brewers. Feel free to talk about any other team you'd like. Talk about salaries. Talk about the importance of baseball in our lives, the rejuvenating aspect of baseball, etc. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And hello, Michael.
Kathleen, how are you?
I am fine, Michael. How are you?
Thank you for the very generous introduction.
Did you like it?
You should be that nice to me at home.
But I am all the time.
Oh, of course.
No, it's a good column. I tell you when it's a good column, don't I?
Yes, I like this one. Thank you.
Yeah. And there is something about the beginning of the whole season. But I like this question you asked. Where does baseball fit in? How can baseball fit in during times that are this difficult? It's a good question.
I think in general, baseball offers a kind of a solace for people, a comfort. Because it's a game that's sort of separated from contemporary American life. It's much slower paced. It has a sort of internal clock that goes on. It's kind of everything else stops. And you can go to a baseball game and get completely involved in it and forget a lot of the problems that are existing outside. And, again, it costs money to go there, so that's another issue. But I think that's what it serves as. I point on the column during World War II, difficult times. Franklin Delano Roosevelt told the owners that they absolutely had to continue baseball no matter what happened to give the American public that kind of outlet.
You talk about Bart Giamatti, and I know you're a fan of his, that he at one point in his life described it as the only freestanding American institution that's been with us since the Civil War.
Yeah, you can see there's some Matthew Brady, you know, the earliest photography on history at that level of Civil War soldiers, Union soldiers, by the way, playing baseball. So that he's right about that. There isn't anything else that has lasted as long as baseball. We're talking now about roughly 150 years.
Yeah. I know you're unhappy about opening the bank statements that come where I don't keep track of the checks. That's one thing. But also what's happened to 401k, et cetera, that your psyche, I like this line. We've lasted so long because you have a good sense of humor. Your psyche would be much better off with a very long look at the box scores. Skip the 401ks, right?
Exactly. Yeah, they're not so pernicious these days. They're kind of benign. You know, you look in there, and there are some numbers, and they're fascinating. And it's better than opening up some envelopes from some financial institution to tell you how many thousands of dollars you lost this month.
I just throw them in the garbage, right?
I know you do.
Yeah, right. I do occasionally. Let me ask you about, because we talk about this around the kitchen table some. You know what bugs the heck out of me is that I've always waited for somebody to say, hey, you know, and maybe they did this year, these times are so bad, people are losing their jobs, we're worried about their pensions, et cetera. We got 10 cities going up in the country. I'm going to donate, or I'm going to just say, you know, baseball contracts are way too large. We got to change our sport too to deal with difficult economic times. But they don't. I know some people are upset. They will be more upset this year by the millions of dollars some of these players make, Michael.
Well, I don't blame these guys as individuals for making that money. That all that means is that someone was willing to pay them an exorbitant sum. And it would be the rare human being, especially a rare American citizen, who would actually do what you're suggesting and turn millions upon millions of dollars away. I think that, you know, most of us obviously will not be in that position ever, so we wanted to make the decision. I think it's fairly easy to say, well, I would be generous. I don't know. You know, human nature being what it is, people are out for every nickel. And these guys, again, the players at the level of the major leagues are measured not only by their statistics, their batting average or run average, but they're measured by how much they make next to their counterparts, their colleagues, contemporaries. And so if you're the best pitcher in baseball and somebody's making $20 million a year, you want $21
million. Right.
Again, that it's unfortunate, but that's just how it is.
And yet, you look at teams like the Brewers, and the press reports the past couple of days say that the Brewers will be lucky, and they're spending a lot for their players, to break even this year. They need to break even this year. Well, they wouldn't have to worry about it as much if the players' salaries weren't so high.
Well, here's what happened this winter. I mean, this isn't maybe an aberration, but it's still kind of telling. USA Today just had a significant piece yesterday. They do a survey every year of the salaries. 14 of the 30 clubs cut salaries since last year. 10 of those 14 cut more than $10 million in salaries. But then you had the New York Yankees paying $423.5 million for three players. And so that's what everyone focuses on. That skews the entire perception of the game. It seems like, how can they pay this kind of money? Well, they're the Yankees, and they have a bottomless pit of money, apparently.
Right.
But and the other thing that that does is that it sets the standard for what salaries might be for other teams that can ill afford that kind of thing, especially today. The clubs are very worried. The economy is going to affect them. They just don't know how much. And they know that, you know, the glory days of the revenues pouring in are pretty much suspended, at least temporarily.
Well, the Yankees, no wonder we don't like them, right?
Well, I found myself watching last night after I got back to the hotel after the rain out.
Oh.
And I was watching CC Sabathia pitch against the Baltimore Orioles, and I like CC Sabathia. I've talked to him several times, and dating back to when he was with Cleveland, and he seems like a fine fellow. But you see him put the Yankee uniform on, and you're like,
right,
this isn't so bad, you know that. And so I think a lot of people who would have normally just disliked the Yankees this year are more actively disliking them. Really, kind of, you know, feeling as though they've just stabbed everyone in the back with this money.
Right. Well, he should have stayed here, too.
Again, we're talking about the difference between $100 million and $161 million.
Oh, for heaven's sake, who cares?
Well, again, I think he and his family did.
Well, I guess.
Everyone said his wife wanted to stay in California.
Hmm.
It turns out she was willing to move across the country, too,
yeah,
for the Yankees' money.
Extra $60 million. You also talk about the game this year is in terrific competitive shape. How so?
Well, I think the big breakthrough last year was the Tampa Bay Rays, a truly small market, small budget team that was able to, because they scouted astutely, they developed players diligently, to develop a lot of their own talent without spending a ton of money. And they had nothing but losing seasons since they entered the league. And then last year they go from being a complete loser to winning 97 games, winning the American League East Division, and then winning the pennant and losing finally to the Philadelphia Phillies in the World Series. But the point is they made the point that this can be done, that anything is possible. And although, again, you're never going to get rid of the Yankees' money, there is, among the other 29 clubs at least, more economic parity than there used to be because of the revenue sharing and luxury tax. A lot of money is being spread around to the smaller and less wealthy clubs. So that's, I think there's more parity, there's more competitive balance in the game. It's a better game than it used to be in that regard.
Interesting. Everybody except the Yankees.
Well, the Yankees apparently are operating on their own planet. It's astounding to me what goes on there, because at their new stadium, they got a couple exhibition games against the Cubs to sort of unofficially open it, but they'll officially open it later in the month. The most expensive seats are $2,600 apiece.
Are you kidding?
Who pays for that? And especially all these Wall Street hotshots that used to be wealthy, maybe some of them aren't so much anymore. It's just astounding, really.
Whew, that is astounding. And how about the Brewers? How will they do? Their strengths, their weaknesses for this year before we go to phones? We have many of our phone lines are getting crowded. So what about the Brewers, Michael?
They're going to be involved in a lot of 10 to 8 games, I think.
Really?
They're going to score a lot of runs. The offense is still there. The primary players are still there. Their problem, at least on paper, would be pitching because they have to replace Sabathia, who was, you know, carried them in the second half of the season. And Ben Sheets, even though he was hurt and unavailable at the end of the season, he gave them a terrific first half and was the National League starting pitcher in the All-Star game. And guys like this don't come along that often. So they're going with some really talented but generally untested guys, Giovanni Gallardo at the top of the rotation, and then Manny Parra, guys like this. Jeff Suppan has not been what they hoped for in the starting rotation. And Trevor Hoffman, who's, you know, one of the two best relief pitchers of all time, is unfortunately on a disabled list as they open the season, and that could be a problem, too.
Oh.
So I think they'll be a fascinating club. I mean, I think they'll be real interesting, but the whole thing rests on how good their pitching can be.
Yeah. Andrew told me last night, I, of course, have to pick you guys' brains when it comes to baseball, that who's this minor league player? Jeremy Jeffries, a minor league pitcher. They may have to bring him up, but he might be okay?
Yeah, he's got a lot of ability, a lot of potential. I don't know that he's ready yet, but they might have to bring him up because they might have holes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, good for him. He has tremendous natural stuff. He just isn't very seasoned yet.
So you think a lot of games 10 to 8?
Well, I may be exaggerating. Maybe they'll be 8 to 6. I think a lot of high-scoring games, based on paper on what this team looks like.
But no chance to follow the rainbow at the end of the season this year, as they did almost last year?
Well, there's always a chance. That's what we love this time of the year.
Everyone
has a chance, you know? I mean, I think they would not be, you know, again, they had a 26-year playoff drought that they broke last year, and good for them. And now the difficult thing is trying to encore from that. And unfortunately for them, they're in a division with the Cubs, who, again, you know, had the best record in the National League during the regular season last year. It didn't get any worse over the winter. And I know they failed again in October, and they didn't, you know, they disappointed trillions of people. But they're pretty solid as the regular season goes. So it's a difficult division in that regard.
I remember you saying last year, too, that when you went to spring training, the Cubs were the best of the lot.
It's shocking to say that, you know, given their history. But they've spent a lot of money. I believe they're now third highest among all the clubs. This year they have a record payroll. Still doesn't come anywhere near the $200 million the Yankees are spending, but, you know, they've invested a lot of money. I don't know how that happens when the entity that owns them, the Tribune Company, has filed for bankruptcy.
Right.
Maybe they're kept on a separate ledger. I don't know. That's astounding to me, too. But, the Cubs are a formidable foe for the Brewers in the NL Central.
Well, you need to write about that. That's a good question.
They've assured everybody that somehow or another the bookkeeping is such that the bankruptcy filing doesn't affect their operation, and apparently it doesn't.
Somehow. Let's take some phone calls. Michael Ballman is our guest this hour as we talk about baseball opening day for the Milwaukee Brewers. And, of course, Michael can talk about all the other teams and the poetry of baseball and how much money players are making and what is the place of baseball during difficult economic times. He joins us by phone from Boston, where their opener will be today because they got rained out yesterday. Our phone number, did I give it to you? It's 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 is the number, and we'll take your calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking baseball this hour of the program. Michael Ballman, who's national columnist for MLB.com, is our guest, and we go to Jack from Eagle River, who's been waiting a long time. Hey, Jack.
Yes, good morning. I have to commend you. Your husband's very versatile. He screened my call as well as being the guest.
Oh, no, John did.
Oh.
John Treader.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, my question has to do with salaries and something that I've always wondered about. When a contract is signed and there are negotiations and all, and they reveal the details of the contract, and they say that Joe Schmuck, shortstop for the Brewers, make $5 million, you know, and that's his contract. So I'm a shortstop for some other team, and I see that publicized, and I call my agent, and I say, I had a better year than he did, and the agent said, you sure did. So on it goes. It's a spiral upward. When I was a kid, I didn't know what the ballplayers made. The first time, I think Joe DiMaggio hit $100,000, and that was headlines. You know, first ball player to make $100,000. But that's it. We knew what the minimum was. I think at that time it was $5,000. So my question is, I wonder why the owners allow that to be revealed, because it's self-defeating, I think.
Well, there's an immense curiosity about it, and a lot of people reporting more than ever, given the Internet, on these situations, because that kind of perversely drawn to that stuff. Yeah, I think a lot of people would be happy if they didn't know their salaries, these people. And you make a terrific point, because when I was a kid, these guys didn't make a whole lot more money than the normal average person. I mean, they obviously, but there would be baseball players in the winter holding down second jobs because they had to financially. And today, and I think the game suffers for this, they're separated by miles from the normal person in terms of their financial situation. And there can be, I think, in some cases, a lot of ill will directed toward them because of that.
Anything else, Jack?
Yeah, just other. Sure. What about the owners revealing the details? Couldn't they just say they signed a contract and everybody's happy and go home? Because all it does is it titillates the other players and the other agents.
Well, there's no question about that. But I think what happens a lot of times is that that information is leaked by the agent, because the agent wants to promote the fact that one of his players just got a tremendous amount of money. I mean, that they're competitive too. And if you said, look, you know, my pitcher is now the highest paid guy in the entire league, you're going to feel pretty good about yourself. They're much more liable to come across with that information than the owners are.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jack, for your call. Let's go next to John from Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Well, it's $2,695, the most expensive seat at Yankee Stadium. And guess what ballpark doesn't have a marble rotunda? Mr. Steinbrenner decided that for $1 billion, he couldn't duplicate what Ebbets Field has. And for that matter, really neither does City Park, or what we're calling Debits Field now. Hmm. The elegance of Ebbets Field was the fact that you came in from Empire Boulevard and you were in the sunlight. And then you walked through this Roy Carrera marbled just opera house-like hall, and then you went through four hot doors that took you through the darkness, absolute pitch darkness of the aisles up, and you hit the green of the field. And City Park doesn't do that. You go up now on the Robinson Rotunda, and you have to go up an elevator and get to the field level. And I think that the thing is that we try to recapture so much of our history, but once it's lost, it's permanently gone, and it's a terrible thing. And I hope that we can find what happened to the Marble Rotunda from Ebbets Field, because we know that there was an Ebbets Field move on September 16th. 2001 from the docks of Manhattan to another lockup in New Jersey. So I hope Mr. Bauman can put on his Sherlock Holmes hat and find it for us.
Well, it's a tremendously poetic description of Ebbets Field, which had an obvious, strong emotional tie to fans of the Dodgers and to people throughout baseball. It really meant something at that point. And yeah, these new and glossy and glorious stadiums sometimes don't have anything resembling that. The Citi Field thing is interesting with the New York Mets, because we're all paying to keep that operation afloat as taxpayers, and yet they're spending untold millions to have the naming rights to that stadium. It's so actually all of us should have a chunk of the naming rights of the new Mets stadium.
Huh. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Know what we call it. Thank you very much, John, for your call. He was poetic. What is it about this game where people can wax poetic and bring in your grandparents and your great-grandparents and the first game you went to and who played and what the score was? What is it about this game that brings forth that?
I think it's the lasting, the staying power, Kathleen, and the fact that it ties together generations, and that some of the best memories that I have of childhood are you know, my father and I at County Stadium. And I think that, you know, it was a special moment for me then. It was a special moment to take each of our three sons in turn to the ballpark for the first time and just watch the, witness the awe and the joy the kid has when the first time he looks out in the field. It's a tremendous moment. And that kind of thing, I think, can't be disrupted. I think people understand how important that is for their families, and therefore the game becomes sort of a part of the fabric of their lives.
Right. And in the case of one of the sons, it's become his life.
It's wall to wall.
It's baseball. It's baseball. Let's go to Ron from Madison. Hey, Ron.
Yeah, good morning. I think your guest just touched on something very tangentially a moment ago about, you know, I think one of the reasons that we have such outrageous players' salaries is that really the outrage, I think, is the taxpayer-funded stadiums. For instance, Miller Park, I call it Miller Pork, it was a perfect example because they wanted the five-county area, what now is the stadium taxing district, the various government entities, the counties and so on, to pay for the stadium, and they said no. So the state legislature imposed a local sales tax on that five-county area to build a stadium that nobody really knows how much it's cost, somewhere between a half a billion and a billion. So this frees up a lot of money for these baseball clubs to pay outrageous wages. So, and I think a lot of the tickets, you know, I was just happened to catch it last night on television that 75% of the tickets in the new parks and or at least one of them in New York will be under $100. Well, I mean, who can afford that, really?
Michael?
Well, there's no question that every single municipality in the major leagues has been asked, maneuvered into paying for taxpayer funding, except I think San Francisco was totally privately funded. And it's the amazing thing to me is it's still happening. I mean, it's a bad time to go with your hand out to a municipality, but for instance, the Florida Marlins have been going on for years about building a new stadium because they play in what is basically a football place, and apparently they're going to be able to do it. But we're in an era now where almost every club has a contemporary kind of stadium that you don't see, with the exception of Wrigley Field and Fenway Park here in Boston. You don't see the historic old stadiums because everybody has found a way to build a relatively new one.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about ticket sales for a moment. He mentioned $100, et cetera, but I'm wondering about the Brewers and what they've done this year. Mike, the report on Sunday was 2 days away from opening day in San Francisco. They've already sold 1.75 million tickets, and it's 10% more than at the same time last year.
It's astounding on several different levels. There are a lot of clubs, Kathleen, right now who are praying that their team gets off to a fast start to boost ticket sales, and they're afraid if that doesn't happen in some places that have been particularly hit hard economically, Detroit, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, those kinds of cities, they really fear for the worst in terms of their attendance. It's a tremendous tribute to the devotion and loyalty of the Wisconsin baseball fans that the Brewers, a market this small, could draw 3 million people in the first place. That is really a remarkable number, and it just goes to the depth of feeling about the baseball that these people have.
So what's peculiar about Wisconsin in that regard? Why do we love it so much here?
Well, I think we waited a long time, 26 years between postseason appearances, and that's part of it. But I think that this was always, I mean, again, when the Braves were first here, they were the first team to have 2 million attendants, and again, Milwaukee wasn't New York at that point either. So I think there's always been a huge support for baseball. It's, you know, it has to be good baseball. It can't be just lousy, mediocre baseball. But if you put a competitive team on the field, people of Milwaukee and Wisconsin will show up in great numbers. And also, I know people denounce the stadium, but one of the reasons you can draw 3 million people is that roof. Because if you're coming from,
right,
you know, Wausau, Eau Claire, Spooner, Superior, Ashland, you want to be certain that there's going to be a game that day after you buy your ticket and drive all that way.
Right.
So with the roof, you get that kind of certainty.
Well, and how many opening days have we been through when it's been snowing, for heaven's sake?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Our number is 800-486-8655, and we're talking baseball. The Brewers are starting their season today. It's opening day for them in San Francisco, and a lot of other teams have had their opening days as well. Michael Bauman is our guest, joining us by phone from Boston, where their game was rained out yesterday, but they will be playing today. And we're just talking about baseball. There it is, every spring, and a lot of clubs are still playing their ball players, a lot of money, but they're still getting great ticket sales for this season, even though the economy is not very good. So what plays baseball in an economic downturn? What does it do for the soul? We have a couple lines open if you'd like to join the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. 800-486-8655. Justin from Milwaukee is next. Hi, Justin.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
And hello to your husband.
Hello.
Hi. My interest in baseball coincided with kind of the resurgence in baseball cards in the 80s. I'm 30 years old. And then the strike happened, and that coincided with my interest in other things besides baseball, like girls and music and stuff like that.
Right.
And then fantasy. Can you guys hear me okay?
Oh, yes.
And then fantasy baseball came along, and I jumped back into it about 3 years ago. And especially this season, I've been obsessed. And I was just wondering what you think about if you've seen this phenomenon elsewhere with people who lost interest when the strike came along and then kind of wanted to get back in, but you forgot the names of the players. And then fantasy baseball came along. I jumped in. And not only that, but I talk to the people who are in my fantasy baseball league more than I talk to my mother.
Oh, you know,
I was just wondering what you think about fantasy baseball phenomenon. And because I know a lot of people think it's kind of maybe injected more stats obsession into baseball and kind of sucked the poetry out of it, but I'm obsessed with baseball this year.
Well, I think you had the experience of millions of people, which was they were alienated by the strike. I mean, just losing the World Series that season, having parts of 2 years disrupted, stopped, was a tremendously negative experience for a lot of people, and understandably so, and some of them still have not come back to the game, but the vast majority have. And I think this fantasy baseball thing, especially with a demographic that you would represent, not as incredible oldsters so much, but the younger generation of people are obsessed with the fantasy baseball, and good, you know? I mean, that's fine. I think any entree to the game is terrific. I think that, you know, if you want to talk to your fellow fantasy baseball players more than your mother, that's unfortunate but understandable. I can see that.
I can't.
Oh, well, it just happens that way. There's a lot of things to be done with the fantasy baseball. And also, the thing with the stats is baseball is a game that is really unlike a lot of others in that it can be measured empirically. There are numbers to represent almost everything. And so the deeper you get into it, the more numbers you have, and that's okay too.
I say, Justin, call your mom.
Yeah, I'm going to give her a call. Thanks.
That's good.
Okay. All right, good.
All right,
thank
bye.
You. Thanks for the call. We go next to Bob from Glenwood City. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. Was wondering what your guests felt the chances are for the Minnesota Twins this year, and just overall what his opinion of their marketing or their management style of avoiding the free agency market at all costs, everything farm-raised, and just what his opinion is, or observations is of that, and I'll listen off the air.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, the Twins are a role model for a small market club because their development, player development, has been so good. The previous general manager, Terry Ryan, set this in motion, and they've been able to be as competitive as anybody with a relatively small economic base because they've scouted well, astutely. They've developed players diligently. And they lose people like Johan Santana, Torii Hunter, big names in the game, and yet they find people in their system to come and fill it in. So there's always a kind of competitive nature of that club. In their division this year, they have as good a chance as anybody. That's a really wide-open division in the sense that there's no overwhelming team, but there's also no bad team in the American League Central. So I think the Twins, who, again, were in the race until the last day and beyond last year, would be knocking on the door again, and good for them.
And let's go next to Dave from Dunn County. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
Hello.
I enjoyed your caller who described what it was like to walk into Ebbets Field. That guy had it right. and your guest mentioned, with the exception of Wrigley and Fenway. And I wish I could believe that, but Wrigley Field has been completely trashed in the past 15 years or so, 20 years. And when it used to be like to go to Wrigley, if you went there and got off the L train or whatever, I always would bring my sister and my nieces. I brought them there for the first time after watching on GN, and come in gate D there, and you walk up the steps with the sun to your back on the third base side, and you would see green. This is what your eye would see. You would see the green grass, and then the ivy, and then the bleachers, and then the building, and then the skyline, and your eye would move left, and you would see the scoreboard, hand letter, of course, more buildings, more blue sky, down to the bleachers, green ivy, and green grass. It was just a great big sigh, and it was beautiful. Now, you see bling, the neighborhood buildings across the street that used to be somebody's house with lace curtains, all individual, beautiful architecture. Now it is a giant facade, and they've turned a neighborhood into skyboxes, and the lights were another issue. I could have lived with the lights, and advertising everywhere, and the blinking big... Okay, I went to Miller Park. Nice park, but that blinking sign that goes around the upper deck
is
always
like
screaming
that
at you visually, that drives me crazy.
Right. All right, Mike.
Well, there's no question these parks have all become a commercial venture.
Right.
And some of the romance is going to be lost in that case. It's an interesting thing about Wrigley Field, because periodically somebody in the Chicago media will say, well, this place really needs to be replaced. It's just not functional anymore. It's, you know, it's worn down. It doesn't look good anymore. It's blah, blah, blah. And then people will howl. You know, millions of people see that place as kind of the end of a religious pilgrimage. You know? And so, I mean, it has a certain aura about it, but I agree with the gentleman that the aura isn't the same as it used to be, but it, again, it captures enough Cub fans that the management doesn't have to worry about it.
There is something, though, about this excessive advertising. You see all the clubs in the country. Do all these clubs have this stuff like the Brewer Stadium has where the lights are on it? I would think it would be distracting to a ball player.
They're utilizing every inch of these stadiums, Kathleen, to advertise something. I mean, it's almost like NASCAR with the 82 things painted on the guy's car. We're getting to that point. At least they're keeping the uniforms relatively free of advertising. I hope that continues.
Right. Thanks, Dave, very much for the call. We go to Rocky from Hillsboro. Hi, Rocky.
Yeah, good morning.
Hello.
Yeah, if you think about it and try to figure it out, when the Packers failed to, well, they had a fiasco. I don't know if I was going to say failed to sign him, but Brett Favre's retirement. And to this day, I have sisters that are just fanatical how they hate Ted Thompson. And myself, I just saw it as a business move, and I think the failure to sign Brett Favre was probably a good move. Or not sign, but play him another year, because... But I'm going to compare that to Paul Molitor, when Bud Selig didn't get him lined up for another year, and he wasn't really asking for much money at all at the time. And this is what irritates me about baseball. It's gotten to where you don't really have a player's career; you just have his contract.
Mm.
You 3 years and he's out. And I haven't been a big Brewer fan ever since Jim Gantner and Cecil Cooper and Paul Molitor and Gorman Thomas and Robin Yount and Ben Ogilvie and all these guys are gone, and yet they had pretty darn good long careers. Maybe not an entire career, but a long stretch of time with the Brewers. And that leads me to my last comment. When I saw that C.C. Sabathia got absolutely nailed last night and didn't even go, an inning or two or three or whatever it was, I agree with you. Everything I heard about C.C. Sabathia was he's a real nice guy. But I hope he goes in the tank this year for the Yankees. And that is my comment.
All right. Thank you, Rocky. Mike.
A lot of people share that view. A lot of people who like C.C. Sabathia. He sort of represents something entirely unfortunate right now with that money, being the richest hit pitcher in history. And again, given that contract at a time when so many millions of people are suffering economically, it's just it's beyond ironic and almost sad. But I think the gentleman was right about the Paul Molitor thing. I recall vividly that at the time they were sort of renegotiating his contract, the then general manager of the Brewers, Sal Bando, referred to him as, quote, only a designated hitter.
Only what?
A designated hitter.
Oh.
And, yeah,
he was only a designated hitter who went to the Hall of Fame. You know, so then the Brewers thought there'd be no market for the guy, but Toronto came in with a very nice offer. And he went up there, and the first season he played in Toronto, they won the World Series. So, and he was a huge part of that. So, yeah, that kind of thing, when you undervalue your own people, that good things don't follow.
Right. How much is Sabathia making now, Mike?
$161 million.
$161 million. And what was he making last year?
It was in the teens, I believe. Huh. He was in the last year of his existing contract that he got with Cleveland. Hmm. And, again, now he is officially the wealthiest pitcher in the history of the game.
Is he really? I didn't know that.
Johan Santana was in the 130s pitching for the Mets. And this contract, of course, had to be bigger, and not only in terms of the gross amount, but also the yearly amount, so that CeCe Sabathia's people could say that he was the highest-paid pitcher. And you know, it's just, the money just staggers the rest of us.
It sure does. Thanks, Rocky, for your call. Let's go to Jeff from Brookfield. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Just want to say you're missed in Milwaukee. I used to enjoy reading your articles a lot.
Hey, thanks very much. I appreciate that.
I wanted to know if you had seen, heard anything, being you have the Boston connection now, the book, The Braves, which was recently released by the Wisconsin Historical Press. It chronicles the Braves' time in Boston and their move to Milwaukee.
I've heard of it. Book. I've not read it.
It's a great book. You may want to get a hold of it.
Oh, thanks. If you liked it, on your recommendation, I'll go after it. It's a fascinating story, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, very much so.
All right, Jeff.
Thank you.
That's it. Thanks very much for the call. Sarah from Pell Lake. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm glad the last caller just answered part of one of my questions, but I have two, and they have nothing to do with each other. I'm just really curious. The first question is, how does baseball teams get so lopsided financially? Is it the owners? Is it where they're at? Is it the people they're going? Is it the businesses supporting it? How is it that one can afford so much and one has to cut back? And my second question is, well, I got the Braves part, but what's a good book on the history of the Brewers and how they came about once the Braves left Milwaukee? Because one of the best things that I enjoy about baseball is the history that follows it and traditions and the things that come with the teams that play. And I just love that aspect of the game, as well as just being able to sit and enjoy a game.
Yeah, that's terrific. I mean, baseball lends itself to baseball reading. I think that's one of the reasons some of us still have jobs, you know, it's like, this website works out because people want to read more about baseball. I don't know that there's been a definitive history. I know that in terms of the high points of the whole Brewers franchise in Milwaukee, Tom Weidrecord, who currently covers baseball for the Journal Sentinel, had a book that came out last year. And I believe, Kathleen, you had him on the show.
Yes, we did.
And that's available. I've seen that in bookstores in Milwaukee. And I read it. It's well done. Again, I don't know if that's a definitive history, but it certainly hits all the high points of the team on the field. And the thing about lopsided, you know, if you're the New York Yankees, you not only have this tremendous population base in New York and this tremendous fan base to draw from, but you own the distribution of the rights. You own the YES Network out there. It's a tremendous economic situation, and so the Yankees own not only the product, but the means of distributing the product via television and then radio, whatever else. And so they're just... The money that rolls in is just incredible. Nobody else can compete with that because nobody else has that situation. And so they're going to be the wealthiest club in baseball for as long as the game goes around. And other teams, aberrational things happen. In San Diego this year, and that's a mid-market team, previous owners undergoing an extraordinarily difficult, costly divorce. And so they're going to cut $20 million off the payroll.
Oh.
The guys that are left there are a little bit unhappy about that, but that's basically what happened, you know. And so it's not always like business situations. It's all personal things come up, too.
Well, at the risk of sounding like a socialist, it seems to me as though there ought to be some socialism in baseball. Why doesn't everybody have kind of an even playing field? Otherwise, in terms of money, otherwise it just doesn't seem very fair to me.
I agree. And in fact, you could make the case that the reason professional football is so extraordinarily popular is that it does have sort of a socialistic model in which the biggest single source of revenue, the national television rights, are distributed equally down to this last cent among all the clubs.
Right.
And that has, you know, brought the whole parity thing into the NFL. Baseball is evolving towards that, but very, very slowly because, of the, again, it's better than it used to be with the revenue sharing, where a club like Milwaukee, you know, would pick up millions of dollars every year from the general fund in baseball and a luxury tax, which taxes the clubs that spend too much. But again, you know, it's nothing like a level playing field.
Michael Ballman is our guest this hour. We're talking baseball. Michael is the national columnist for MLB.com, for those of you who miss his writing here in Milwaukee. He's still in Milwaukee. Just go to the web, MLB.com. He's in the perspectives part of the MLB site and writes about baseball on a national level. So we have a couple lines open if you'd like to join us. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and we'll take more phone calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mike Baumann is our guest. Scott from La Crosse, our next caller. Hey, Scott.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. Well, what I'd like to do here, if you guys don't mind, is exercise my birthright as an American to wallow in Yankee bashing for a minute. have you guys discussed the ticket prices at the new stadium?
We have, yes.
Okay. So my question is, given all that and the box seats for, what is it, up to $500,000 for one season for those luxury boxes? That's nice. As I understand it, they're still calling it Yankee Stadium. How could they have missed an opportunity to sell the name? I don't get that.
I believe that what happened there was that they were negotiating with a financial institution that subsequently had to pull out of the deal, and they get to still call it Yankee Stadium.
AIG taken, was it?
It's probably Lehman Brothers. You know, they're going to have to, they'll be poor in that regard. They won't have millions of dollars on naming rights, but you know what? They don't even need it.
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, really, they're not hurting. No. Can I tell a quick story? This is funny. I knew a guy who knew a guy kind of thing who played poker with a charter pilot who won flying those executive jets, and he had a contract one time to fly George Steinbrenner around Florida during the spring training. And he was telling his poker buddies about what this gig was like, and he said, you know, George Steinbrenner has this reputation of just being so nasty and difficult, and you know, how everybody just thinks he's the world's worst person. He says, but you know, when you really work with him and you spend some time with the man and you really get to know him, you come to realize that's really true. Thanks, folks.
Thank you.
So much better. Good.
It's good to feel better on opening day. Thanks, Scott, for the call. Timothy from Suring, Wisconsin. Hi, Timothy.
Hi. I was just wondering what his thoughts were on Jim Powell leaving. And who's going to be up in the booth with Uecker now?
Well, I thought Jim Powell was one of the most solid announcers in the business. He was always, always, always really well prepared.
Yes.
He'd done his homework.
Yes.
And he was, you know, that's not an easy job because obviously Bob Uecker is going to be the star of the show, and you sort of have to fit in around the margins. But he did tremendously well. And I have a lot of respect for his intelligence and his preparation and his love of the game. And I think, you know, he goes to a much larger market, and also he's from the South, so going to the Atlanta Braves is a terrific move for him. I've not met the new gentleman, but, you know, there have only been, in the last 25 years, two guys with that job opposite Uecker, and they both come on to bigger things. Pat Hughes, who's, you know, play-by-play radio guy for the Cubs, and Jim Powell, who's going to be with the Braves in a huge, you know, regional network down there.
And how long has Uecker been with them? Long time.
Since the dawn of time, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. He's a real treasure, isn't he?
Oh. You know, remember, he's the face of the franchise in many ways because he's so his humor is so unique, and it's Milwaukee, too. He's Milwaukee.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think think it takes a great skill. I've always thought you should do this. I told you this at home, but you didn't listen to me. You should have applied for that job because you're very good on the radio, and it takes homework to do that. People don't. I think it must be a tremendously difficult job to talk that long and make everything interesting and weave in the outside world and funny stories, et cetera, and yet hit the thing so that you're saying what's happening at bat and when the inning ends. The timing on that is exquisite.
Yeah, a lot of people still may watch the game on TV, but will have the sound down and have the radio on.
Right.
Because those guys are so evocative, you know, and many of us grew up listening to, you know, there wasn't baseball on TV on a daily basis. Many of us grew up with the game on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Earl Gillespie and Blaine Walsh in my childhood with the Braves. And you just had a special regard for those people. They're like a member of the family, even though you never met them. Because they were in your house every day.
Right.
And so, I mean, you know, you know what radio is, and that's the best of it, I think. And it's just a very special, again, another special relationship between the fans and the ball club, the entity that's out at the ballpark.
Thank you so much for the call, Timothy. Kay is next. Hi, Kay. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is pretty much the same as the last guy's. I'm thinking the reason that Wisconsin loves baseball so much and loves our Brewers so much is because of Uecker. I mean, if we didn't have Mr. Baseball, I don't know what we would do.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I think sets him apart from the vast majority of people is that you can take, I mean, anybody can announce the 4-3 game in the 10th inning because there's a lot going on and there's drama and, oh boy, this is great. But you take a day when they're losing 8-2 in the 7th inning. And he's still entertaining. And people
You're
are
right.
still listening because
right.
Bob Uecker is broadcasting the game.
Right.
So this lady is absolutely correct about that. He sets them apart from every other franchise because of that factor.
How true. That's a nice way to put it. Thanks, Key, for the call. Well, we have to talk about the White Sox for a moment because it's our president's team, and he evidently, I was reading, was offered a new hat, and there's a lot of superstition in this game which I want to ask you about, but he said no. He wanted to continue to wear his well-worn hat that you see him with all the time when he's going for his workouts. There will be more attention on the White Sox just because he's a fan, don't you think, Mike?
Oh, I suppose that there'll be a little extra. There'll be plenty on the White Sox anyway. But, yeah, I think that's that'll be a factor. I noticed there was a piece yesterday in USA Today about it that was their cover story in the sports section. And so much will be made of that. And fine, you know, and the president's on a little bit of a roll because he picked North Carolina to win the basketball tournament.
Oh, that's right.
And so he got that. I don't know that the White Sox are going to be that dominant this year, but they'll be highly competitive. And, you know, he's being true to his geographical situation there.
Nothing wrong with that. That was my team growing up.
Well, there you go.
Those White Sox, right?
There you go.
We go to Liz from Madison. Hi, Liz.
Hi. See, I just wanted to say that I've been a Milwaukee fan for a while now. I used to be a big Twins fan, and so obviously I'm from the Midwest, and I can't tell you how many Midwesterners love to see those big teams lose and not even make the playoffs. You know, it's almost like we cheer them on when all these big money players are playing that, you know, we hope they lose. And, I mean, it takes the fun out of baseball, but, I mean, being from the Midwest, we just love to see these big teams lose.
Bushville wins, right?
Right.
Yeah.
We got the picture at home. That proves it. Yeah, I think last year when the Yankees finished third and missed the playoffs for the first time in 13 years.
Oh, my.
There was a lot of secret rejoicing going
yes,
on around baseball, even though people knew that without the Yankees in the postseason, the ratings would be down.
Yeah,
I know, but
still, it's just, and when the Milwaukee or Minnesota or some of these smaller teams play these big teams and win, it's ever that so much more fun, I think, to see that the big teams go down. I wish CeCe Sabathia well, but I'm terribly disappointed that he's chosen this path to want to be the highest paid player
right.
in baseball,
right.
Our pitcher in baseball. It really takes the fun out of it.
Well, I think the millions of people feel exactly the same way, that they respected what he did in Milwaukee, but they find it regrettable that he, you know, he went for the huge money. I think the other thing about his situation is he had a very troublesome start yesterday, and if he throws together three or four of those more, these people in the New York media and the tabloids will completely turn around, and they'll be like vicious dogs attacking.
Oh.
I mean, And with all due respect, that's what will happen. It could be a very, very negative experience for him out there.
Oh. Well, it's the decisions we make. Liz, thanks. We have about 30 seconds left, but Susie from De Pere is next. I think we have time for you, Susie. Hi.
Well, hi. Just a quick comment. Long-time baseball family. I think that I have a concern. One of the reasons that baseball has had so much appeal over history, over time, is that it was such a popular pastime during recess and in FIED classes. And as a teacher, I will tell you that that's disappearing from curriculum. And that often kids don't even understand when they can advance on a fly ball. I do a little substituting, and I was shocked to find out in a FIED class that they didn't know the rules. But the positive end of that is that baseball is still attracting fans. And I think sometimes, I think one of your other callers was a fan at being attracted later in life.
Mike, we have about 10 seconds.
Yeah, I think the baseball needs to do plenty of work among the younger generation. Otherwise, you tend to lose them. But again, we don't have that situation in our household.
No, we don't.
This kid knows more about the Brewers than I do.
But
I think there's a demographic age problem that we've got, and baseball needs to do more to appeal to young people.
Thank you, Mike. You're peach for being with us again. Have fun today.
Kathleen, always a pleasure to be with you, whether on the air or, of course, at home.
Oh, thank you. Mike Bauman, our guest this hour. We thank him. He's joining us from Boston. And thanks for listening, everybody.